Okay, can I have everyone's attention now? Okay, we're going to start with our DNA workshop, which is going to be presented by Margaret Waters and Liz Hill. And Margaret's going to be up first. So, welcome, Margaret.
Okay, thank you, Sam. This is going to be a little more involved for this morning's talk. What I'm going to do is take you through about a 30-minute presentation of some of what you can do with your test results. You may need to shut this door. And then I'll take general questions from the floor, and then if you'll give us a few minutes to disconnect projector equipment, Lynn and Jim and I are going to set up in here with our laptops, and we are the three co-administrators of the Orange Burn District Project. As such, we can go in through our administrator status and pull up your personal homepage. So if any of you have questions you want to ask any of us one-on-one, if you look at your homepage and you're going, well, what's this? What do I do? We'll be willing to sit here for some moderate length of time and take one-on-one questions. I'd like to be home before midnight. So hopefully this first part of the presentation will give you some additional ideas about what you can do. The first thing I can't emphasize enough, if you haven't already done it, when you get your Family Finder results, and I'm referring to the specific Family Finder test at FamilyTreeDNA.com. You have to have a test at FamilyTreeDNA.com, not any of the other companies that do this, to join the Orangeburg District Project. The point of the Orangeburg District Project is to pool our resources, to make it easier to find our Orangeburg connections. I know there's several of you in this room today that have met cousins that you maybe seen at these meetings before, but you didn't realize, hey, we're second cousins, or we're fourth cousins. So we're trying to put the information together. That's what the Orangeburg Project is about. The second thing you should do is please be open to the idea of submitting your ancestral data to me, so that I can create your Orangeburg ancestors chart and post it on the OGSGS website. Now, I'll go through some of the process of what this is, but you submit the information to me. I go through and pick out the Orangeburg part of it. I send it back to you to get approved to make sure you're no typos, you know, you like what I've got. We put it on the web page. The web page is password protected, so it's not available to the general public. When your chart gets posted on the page, you also get sent a password, and you can look at not only your chart, but everybody else who has submitted a chart. So this is one way we're trying to help focus on our Orangeburg ancestors by having the information, some of the information that initially you would share with your matches online at the OGS website. So, having said all that, we're back to the same chart I showed you this morning. This is the way I prefer to get the information. A simple list, starting with yourself, mom and dad, third generation, your four grandparents, fourth generation, eight great grandparents. Fifth generation, 16 second great grandparents. I don't need anything other than their names, what year they were born, where they were born, what year they died, and where they died. I don't need that information on you and mom and dad. I mean, for privacy issues, we really don't need that. We're going to be mostly looking at people who match us back in the fourth, fifth, sixth, possibly seventh generation. So that's where we want the data. I'd like you to start the chart with yourself because that gives me the way to organize it by anatomical numbers so I can put everybody in their right place. If you don't have this question,
Margaret, yeah? Could you put the template of that page
Possibly could, yeah. Was there one in the newsletter?
There was one in the newsletter.
Yeah.
I was thinking that all these things signed in the
CD. Oh, great. Yeah, it's actually an Excel spreadsheet I just created.
You can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it could be done with a Word container just as easily. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll look into that. Okay, I can take a GEDCOM. I can take a pedigree chart. If, you know, this is the easiest way to do it. As I said this morning, you will get more reacquainted with these ancestors when you pull this out of your files, because you're going to be looking at matches for all of these people through your fifth generation. You need to know who they are. So, however you send me the information, I'm going to take it and create a chart that looks like this to post on the Orange Bird, the OGS webpages. This is just the ancestors that have some connection to Orange Bird District. Now, obviously, they weren't all born in Orange Bird District, but as you go back, you see where the Orange Bird District names occur. This is a judgment call on my part. If I posted everybody's complete chart, I'd spend the rest of my life typing up all this data. So that's where you get some input, whether you'd rather have these names on it or not. I try to give clues. For example, both of these grandparents of mine had roots in Orangeburg. My grandfather there, his father was from Orangeburg, but his mother was from Marion District. So I made a note here, Marion District. She drops out of the chart. I go with the Orange Bird. One thing you'll want to keep in mind once you start looking at these Orange Bird charts is that you could quite possibly be related to somebody, one of your matches, in some way other than Orange Bird District or in addition to Orange Bird District. So don't let this be the only way you look to see how you're related to somebody. But it's a good start. It lets you hone in on your Orangeburg connection. If you were looking at my chart and saw that I had a line there from Marion District, you might think, oh, gee, I had a great-great-grandmother from Marion District. Maybe you should contact me and check a little more and see what were your lines from Marion District. This focuses on the Orangeburg District lines, but that in itself can be quite helpful. When you get two of these charts, there's two participants in the Orangeburg District project, it becomes very easy to figure out how you're related. And what we're looking for is your most recent common ancestral couple. It is not one ancestor, it's an ancestral couple because of the fact that DNA comes from two people. So on this chart, we have Edward Boland Jr. and Mary S. Bonnet. They're in the fifth generation. This person has Edward Boland Jr. and Mary S. Bonnet in the fifth generation. Does anybody know how that makes us related? I'll be able to, once you do this enough, you'll be able to just spit it out. These are third cousins. Third cousins. A trick I have developed to use is that your cousinship, or, you know, cousin relationship, is two less than the common generation. Fifth generation, your third cousins. Fourth generation match would be second cousins. Third generation, first cousins. Right on that. So right away, you look, if we have match down here, the sixth generation, the fourth cousins. It becomes very easy once you work with life. Now, suppose somebody doesn't match you in the same generation. Here we've got this fifth couple in the fifth generation, got this one down here in the seventh generation. Anybody know that? Right. Fifth generation would be third cousin, once, twice removed. So, this is information when you figure out exactly how someone is related to you, you'll see that we're going to be using it when we work further with this information. So it's a helpful piece of information to know. Having two charts that you can put side by side like this makes it really easy to compare. Ideally, you might want the charts showing all of your ancestors and all of the other person's ancestors if you need to work to that. But at least we can start with the orange groups. Now, what I'm going to talk about now is called chromosome mapping. The easiest way to do it is probably in an Excel spreadsheet. It helps if you're somewhat familiar with Excel software. I will caution you, it can be rather boring and tedious to put all the information together, but if you stick with it, you will get some quite fascinating results to work with when you explore who are all these people I match with and how are we related. So, the first thing you're going to want to do is go to the chromosome browser on your Family Finder page of your website. Once you've gotten your test results back, everybody remember where this was from this morning? Okay. You can select up to 5 names here. That's the most they're set up to let you select. If you want the example I'm going to show you, I picked a deliberate set of 5 names that I know have relationships. I know what the relationships most of them are. Ideally, you would eventually want to do this with all of your matches. That involves you select 5 names here. The results show up here. But if you look down here, it says download to Excel. You're going to want to click that and save it on your computer. And forgive me, but this is what you'll get. Now, I know this is going to make most of you nod and go, this is what you're going to get, except for the red line and the blank column. I picked 5 people on my list. You get the first column on the spreadsheet is obviously my name. The second column is going to have the name of those 5 people that match me. The third column is where they match me, on what chromosome, because that's the first piece of information you want to know. We're looking at 22 chromosomes. Do I match on chromosome 3 or 15 or 12 or where? So that's your first number, what chromosome you match on. The next number is where on that chromosome you match. Now, people that plan this, there's a whole lot of spots on that chromosome, so they just number them 1 to whatever. So this is where your eyes really glaze over, because on chromosome 1, our match starts at location 1794162. And is everybody yawning yet? And it ends at this location. That particular match happens to be 20.82 centimeters long. That's a significant match. It has 3,175 SNPs in it. That's significant. These are the numbers I talked about this morning. The higher they are, the more significant. And that shows up in your initial report. But here, what we're doing here is we're actually getting the raw data. It's not the bottom line raw data. The bottom line raw data, instead of giving you this, where say you had A, G, C, T, A, you know, whatever, and instead of numbers, you'd be reading letters, and that would get us nowhere. So we're working with the data at the level of numbers. The first person that matches me, the download will show all of their matches listed by chromosome. So that's why I drew this red line. You can't tell it on here, but that's where the first match ends. Second person that I selected on that, their match starts here. You'll have, depending on how closely related these people are to you, you'll have 2 or 3 or 4 pages of matches. Now, that doesn't tell you a whole lot more than looking at the chromosome browser. But we're going to take it and play with it. I like to make things a little more readable. So I go in and try to simplify the chart, make it a little more pleasant to look at. I can eliminate that first column with my name in it. Instead, if I wanted to, I could put a little heading up here in the cell and say Margaret's Matches. Or Margaret's Matches with Bowling Cousins, which just happened to be. I highlight and sort of condense the column titles, make it something I'm comfortable with, make them easy to read. Now, I have added three columns to this spreadsheet. Most recent common ancestral couple. I know that this first person matches me, actually, in two places. We have a Bolin-Fogel connection, and we have a Bolin-Bonnet connection. She has Bolin twice in her lineage. So I'm going to make a note of both of those. That's two different places we could potentially match. What we don't know is whether we match here on the Fogel side or the Bolin side. Here, do we match on the Bonnet or the Bolin? That's why you have to look at the common ancestral couple. Then you're going to want to go ahead and make a note of the relationship, which is easy to figure out from the charts I just showed. We are second cousins. Now, actually, we're second cousins at Bolin-Fogel connection. We technically are, I think, fourth cousins once removed if we look at the Bolin-Bonnet connection. But I just went with the strongest relationship there. All right. This last column, I've added the surnames where we possibly share DNA. Starting with Bolin and Fogel, what surnames go back in our charts common to both of us? In this case, Bolin, Fogel, Hare, and a bunch of unknowns. You know nothing about the hairline. Bolin-Bonnet. That's where we pick up the Bonnet and a couple more unknowns. This is all going to become important eventually, but for right now, you still got the spreadsheet, the same format you downloaded it. You're just adding some information to it. Down here, this particular person, I don't know the details yet. That's somebody I actually haven't worked with. Here's another person starting down here, Bolin Bonnet, third cousin. I'm putting the names here. Bolin, Bonnet, Sally, we think who married Jan, four unknowns. So you can see where we're going with this. You've got to start with the common couple and then look at the various ways that you might be related if and when you're able to work your way back through that. What we're after is learning about some of those unknowns. But we don't mind finding out that, yes, we really are related as fourth cousins to somebody, because we've both independently done our genealogy back six generations, and the DNA confirms it. That's a nice feeling in and of itself. So, when I come up with the number of unknowns on there, what I've actually done is gone back to that first chart I made of my ancestors. And you'll remember that I didn't put a lot of unknowns in there. But when I'm working with a common ancestral couple, I generally will want to go back and spend some more time looking at what is it I know and don't know about the ancestors of that couple. So here's the Bolin-Bonnet couple. They're in my fifth generation. I know about when they were born, where, when they died. Okay, we know Edward Bolin's parents, Edward Sr. and Ann Sapp. We have information about them. Edward Sr. was born in Ireland. We know nothing further. And Sally, we can come down in the seventh generation, we know her parents. But let's take these unknown ancestors and think about what we know about them, even when we don't know their names. There's a darn good chance that Edward Bolin Sr.'s father, some unknown male Bolin, and we're going to presume his surname is the same or some version, was born in Ireland, probably died in Ireland. We can even estimate a potential range of when he was born from when, what we know of his son. We have the Sally information. Here, we're already missing the Bonnet, male Bonnet, and the female who married this Bonnet. So when we come down here, we've got yet another male Bonnet. We pick up another unknown female. We have an unknown male line and an unknown female line off of this one. And I'm to my seventh generation. Now, I probably don't have DNA from all of these people. I've got DNA from these two. But I probably have DNA from some of these people. My matches along this line will have DNA from some of these people. So what we're working at is a way to focus down on where can we possibly else match. Summarizing this chart, from one ancestral couple that I knew in generation 5, by just the 7th generation, just 2 more generations, there's one unknown male line, probably that was in Orangeburg District, based on where the children were and where they met and married. You can make some assumptions about locations. There's one unknown female Irish line, because we've got Edward Bowen's mother. She was probably born in Ireland, I mean, you know, most likely. We have 2 unknown female lines that probably also were in Orangeburg District. So that's where I get the information that I put on this previous chart about all the unknowns. I've done some analysis from each couple. How many unknowns are we talking about? Because more unknowns there, when you get to a match and you can't figure out what the common names are, that's where you start looking. Okay, maybe it's one of these lines we don't know about. So, that's what we just said. All right. The next thing you're going to do, and this is where you finally get to have some fun, after you've gone to all the trouble to create this chart, and I suggest you just start with 5 people that you know you might be closely related to or analyze. But eventually you're going to want to download, take a deep breath, everybody that you match into one database. Then you're going to go into Excel and you're going to sort, first by chromosome number, and then by the start location. And this is going to mix everybody up. But what it does, it allows you to look for places where you have overlapping segments. And if you know where one of those segments came from, and you don't know where the one, in this case, this one fits within these 2 numbers. It's a shorter segment, 4.45 centimorphs, that falls within this 27 centimorphs segment. And there's 2 possibilities here. There's a possibility that this is a piece of this actual segment from somebody related back in here somewhere, or there's a possibility, this is my mother's side of the family, there's a possibility that that smaller segment is from dad's side of the family and has nothing to do with this. But if you find the same pattern repeated 3 or 4 more times, it becomes much more likely that you're looking at a segment that shares some common ancestry. That's what you're looking for. Now, this happens to be a guy I had corresponded with briefly, and when I looked at his family lines, the only name, he didn't know a whole lot, but the only name he had that registered with me was Tyler. I said, well, there were Tylers in Orangeburg District. His Tylers were in Virginia, and they left and went to Kentucky and west from there. He didn't know anything about any of the Kings down. But the Tylers, which were a large family in Orangeburg District, probably came from Virginia. They settled on the South Fork of the Evisto River, right where the Bonnets lived. Is there a Tyler female in my Bonnet line? This gives me a very good place to start doing some additional research. And the way we can strengthen this is to not only find more of these Tyler matches within my DNA, but I want as many Bonnet cousins to get tested, because where I wouldn't maybe matching, some of them do. If there's enough matches between this Tyler descendant and these Bonnet descendants, we're getting really close to being able to say, okay, that's who one of those early Bonnet ancestors was. That's the kind of thing we're looking for with this. It's not easy to get to, but it can be very satisfying. I actually have turned up 3 surnames that may fit in with mine, plus a connection in Ireland. My Irish ancestor, Edward Bowen, I've got a match with somebody from Ireland. Her ancestors were never in the South. They came into New York a generation or 2 later. But, you know, I need that match to show up for a few more of my cousins, and then we're on to something. So this is what you can get if you get enough cousins to participate. Each of us has different, some similar and some different pieces of our ancestors' DNA. So with enough pieces to make a strong enough case, we can start figuring out some of this. This is a place here, I just thought I'd show, where two different matches with me have exactly the same thing. It's a fairly short segment, 2.95, but they both come from Bolin Bonnet, and this one also matches on Bolin Fogel, so that lends evidence to the fact that this particular piece of our DNA may have actually come back here from the Sally line or somewhere earlier. Again, we're still not quite prepared to say, but the process is going through and accumulate enough pieces of evidence like this to make a case for it. When I first started doing this, my first attempt at this was I created a database and I transcribed all of my matching data. I didn't realize you could download it 5 at a time. So I have a database with about 300 or 400 matches because I've also pulled some from other testing companies I've done. This is actually the kind of thing with a whole lot of people, either in your spreadsheet or in your database, where I can identify some of these matches. Again, it's based on the starting and the beginning, starting and ending segments on the same chromosome. You come over, and here's people that all fall within that same group, same surnames. This is why you want to go effort to put in the ancestral couple, the surnames of interest, the relationships. This is where you can really start mining and working with the data. The Tyler guy that I showed you on the previous example, I contacted him out of my list of, at that time it was only 70-some-odd matches, because he fell right between two bowling matches that I had within the same state. So I said, maybe he'd be worth contacting earlier, because if you've got 300 or 400 matches, it's going to take a while for you to get around to contact. So this gives you a way to help prioritize after you've contacted the closest person. And if there's a particular section of the family you've got a lot of questions about, like Lyme-Turner, this is a way to get through it. So, in summary, this is only one of several things you can do once you've got your test results. There's a website called GEDmatch that you can download your data to and run some stuff on it. That would be another whole presentation. I haven't worked with it a whole lot. Doing this kind of thing is slow. It's tedious. Your eyeballs are going to cross when you look at all these numbers. You might just make a goal, okay, I'm going to download 2 sets of 5 matches every other day or something. I mean, don't take it all at once, you know. Do it piecemeal. You're going to obviously have to keep up with what you've done and eventually combine it. It can be very rewarding when you get clues to those unknown females. I'm excited about it, finding out if I really do match the Tylers or a couple of other families down there that I've got news on. But also know that if you've had your test done and you choose not to do any of this, you have still made an important contribution, because without the data in the pool of information to compare to, we get more information the more people are sharing their data in the data pool. And that's what the Orangeburg Project is about. So I definitely would encourage you and any of your relatives that you can get tested, agree to test, and put them in the Orangeburg Project. You don't have to go any farther than that if you don't want to. Those of us who are, DNA nerds or whatever you would want to call us, we can do a lot of this number crunching. I've started a Bolin Sally DNA project at Family Tree for descendants of Ed Bolin Sr. and Ann Sally, so that we can coordinate and slice and dice our data. So there's all sorts of possibilities. You know, if you've got a particular line you want to work on, and you're into this, you could consider doing the same thing. But like I say, don't be discouraged if you don't want to do any of this. Just thank you for putting your data in the pot, and that's very important. So at this point, if you've got any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
You may also want to point out, for anybody who has not signed up at all, I have a handout here that guides you through the process of signing up at Family Tree with the right website addresses and so forth. So you can pick that up if you're.
Yeah. The important thing is there are a lot of testing companies out there, including Ancestry. To join the Orangeburg Project, your data has to be at familytreedna.com. So they will take transfers from some companies, but otherwise you have to test there. And then you go through the process of doing it to join the Orangeburg Project.
When you crunch that data, and you have a beginning, say the beginning is 3-2 or something, and you have one that's 3 or 29, it's close, but it's not in that same thing. Can they be related?
Yes. Very often you will not have exactly the same starting point. More often,
so it doesn't fall anywhere in there. It's just adjacent to.
Well, now adjacent. It could be related, but if like the first one is, we'll make it simple, from 0.4 to 0.6.
Right.
And the second one is from 7 to 9.
That's right.
It could be related. It could be that was all once part of a longer segment that got broken in each line of descent, but it might not be. It's more important if one goes from, let's say, 4 to 10, and another one starts at 6 to 11. There's some overlap.
The reason I ask is because when you click on in common with, I got in common with this group that lined up, and then the ones that were next to it, but not
right.
In them.
It, I'd say it could be. You also have to keep in mind that any of these places, it could be a match between your dad's line or your mother's line. Now, in my case, with my dad's parents coming from Germany, going back to the 1600s, and that's northern Germany, not where any of our Orangeburg people came from. And my mother's people being in South Carolina since the colonial era, I can actually go down my list of matches and just about pick out those European names that match my dad's DNA. You know, I may have it a little easier than some in that regard, although I have to be careful not to jump to conclusions just because the name looks here. But yeah.
What if you don't know both the birth and the death? There's some people I've learned about death.
Yeah. You can estimate, or in some of the cases on the charts, I just read it blank. Question mark 2, 18, 9. Oh, yes. Because the birth and death dates are really just trying to say, this is this John Smith versus this John Smith who had slightly different birth and death dates. And I get people with the same ancestors, and the dates are off by a couple of years here and there. Sometimes I think catching and changing, but you'll find some that don't be on the website. But it's sort of like this genealogist, I think, of the birth and death is the bookends of somebody's life. So, and that's what we're concerned about. This is where they were then. Right, that time frame. So if you're within a few years, that's good enough for this initial purpose. Yes.
You mentioned that the Orangeburg group would take a few outside groups, but not most. What's the reciprocal of that? Let's say that I've got family there in Ohio, for example. Mm-hmm. Would my test in the Orangeburg group be useful to people up there, or do you want to?
It still would be, because when you first get tested, you're in the entire family tree DNA database. So all of your matches can look at your information. Some cousin that you're related to through an Ohio line can look at your data. By joining the Orangeburg group, what we're basically doing is winnowing down a certain subset of your matches. And I should mention this. Once we break down from this, Lynn and Jim and I are going to sit here with our laptops on and hopefully a strong enough internet connection that we can go online as project administrators. One of the things we'd like to do is to be able to tell everybody who's currently in the Orangeburg project, we can go in and tell you a list of people who you match right now who are also within the Orangeburg project. Some of them you will recognize their names, and others may surprise you. So that's one of the pieces of information we can give. We'll share that with any Orangeburg participants today, but in the future we're going to share that once you submit your data to the OGSGS website. That'll be one of the pieces of information you get back. So you will be able to go right there and say, okay, you're going to have these matches. That's a few more matches. The whole process is trying to identify some of those matches. And when you get the password to the OGSGS website, you have to change it the first time you go in under that password.
There's a time limit on that.
Yeah, there may be a time. I don't know how Jim said that.
Right.
There is a time limit.
It will
be
fine. That's what you have to send your email.
Yeah, so I'll just send you a new one when I get home and go in tomorrow. Yeah. So, let's see some other questions.
I couldn't figure out how to get into
to the... To the Orangeburg website?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what click on for the first
step. Yeah, okay. Well, one of us can pull it up and walk you through it, and anybody else that wants to watch this afternoon. I mean, that's what we're going to try to do here for the next time, you know, one-on-one, is hold hands and walk you through some of this.
Margaret, can you tell me relatively easily how to find in Commonwealth? I'm trying to find it in my brain.
Okay. I am no expert on it. I'm not sure what you're using there. There's probably stuff on this website I haven't seen.
Okay, I can tell them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Go to that. Yes. You go over, it says assign, yes. Click on assign, yes. You can assign them anything, it doesn't matter. Assign them one and click save. Go back to the top, yes. And where it says what you want matches or all this stuff you can have in common with, click on that. And the person that you have saved that data from, it's going to give you all your concepts. Now, the problem is, now you can find them in a specific relationship. So when you get through looking at that, go back to that assignment, go back to the top where it's running, and it's based on that, and erase with that relationship.
Okay, so you're using a sneaky little way to search. Instead of scrolling through 20 pages of matches for those surnames, you're using a back door where
for
the sake.
Does it for you?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, that's presuming they've got surnames listed.
No, this is DNA. The DNA does it for you.
Oh, okay.
For instance, I'm scanning your mind. Because she is the only one here that I know that I'm related to. So I clicked on hers, did the same thing, and there were five people that came up because she and I were there.
Okay. All right, so she's pulling up other people. Okay, yeah. That would be a useful way to explore this.
Mm-hmm. Now I got to know how. That's one of the questions I want to ask you. How then are we related? Are all those people... They have to all be related to both of us.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good case where you would want to get their names. And, well, now let's see. If they don't match you.
They match me.
They all match you and Pam.
And Pam.
Okay. Go into the chromosome browser. select those five people on that list and download their DNA raw data into the cell spreadsheet and see where you're overlapping in the other. So yeah, and if you're over there. Yeah. Anybody still awake? Any more questions? Okay, well, give us a few minutes and we'll set up here.